Today in the studio, we have Dr. Lafford from the Forensic Science Service, who is here to tell us a little more about forensic science.
Good morning.
Now, I think most people have a fairly good general picture of the kind of work you do. In many ways, it's a development of Sherlock Holmes and his magnifying glass, isn't it?
Yes, you could put it that way. Although we've come a long way since then, of course. But Holmes was very much a detective of the modern age. Of course, he was an intelligent man, and his medical knowledge often seemed better than that of his companion, Dr. Watson. And certainly his observations were always very detailed. But what sets him apart is that Holmes provides us with a good model, a very good model, in fact, of the kind of approach, psychological approach, that a forensic scientist should have. And that is that the forensic scientist is absolutely impartial.
So you're not, strictly speaking, part of the police force?
No, we are quite separate.
Could you tell us a little about your work and what it is you do?
Well, the basic principle behind forensic science is that every contact leaves a trace. Wherever we go, whatever we touch, material is transferred both ways. The shoe that leaves a mark on the ground also picks up traces of dirt, and the hand that makes a fingerprint also carries away particles from the object that was handled. And things like hair or carpet fibres are easily passed from one person to another.
I see. So it's not just that the suspect leaves clues at the scene of the crime. The scene of the crime leaves clues on the suspect.
Absolutely. And that is normally the most compelling evidence. Not just when you have a fingerprint, for example, but also where you found traces of, say, the carpet at the scene of a crime on the suspect's clothing. And that, of course, can be very hard to explain away.
Is your work fairly straightforward? A question of seeing whether various samples match up?
No, not at all. Forensic science is often a very painstaking task and very time-consuming. Much more so than previously, in fact, because the range of tests has mushroomed. For example, we might be given some pieces of a headlight swept up after a hit-and-run accident and asked to identify the car. So we would fit the thousands of pieces together like a vast jigsaw and might be able to identify the number embossed on the back of the glass. That would help us identify the model of the car, the make, the age, and so on, making it easier to search for the suspect. And then, once the car was located, we could tell whether the lights had been on at the time of the accident by examining the light bulb, because there would be minute pieces of molten glass on the metal filament in the bulb.
So you need some fairly sophisticated equipment, as well as patience.
Indeed. Now, the electron microscope is invaluable in our line of work, and it basically does two things. It gives us a fantastically detailed image. So, for example, you can tell whether a piece of hair has been broken or cut with a pair of scissors or a knife. And it can also give you the chemical composition of a sample, so that you can take, perhaps, a tiny flake of paint on a suspect's clothing and match it with paint at the scene of the crime.
Are you at the stage, then, where you could say that the evidence that you provide is foolproof?
No, not foolproof. There is always room for human error, and there's nothing that can be done about that. Forensics is not an absolute science. I mean, let me give you an example. Now, Sherlock Holmes might have found a strand of hair at the scene of a crime, perhaps black and 2 inches long, that would have helped him identify the murderer on the basis that the hair matched the murderer's. Now, we also examine hair. But in the example I gave you, perhaps one person in 20 has black hair 2 inches long. So we need to improve on this analysis to narrow down the number of suspects. So we would analyse the strand of hair using the electron microscope, as I was saying earlier, look at its chemical composition, whether it came from a man or a woman, see how it was cut, whether it showed any traces of particular chemicals and so on. And in that way, instead of saying that one person in 20 had hair like that, it might be one person in 500,000 or a million. That would be just about as far as we could go. Now, there's no such thing as certainty, just a balance of probability, even with the most advanced techniques of genetic fingerprinting. The evidence we provide is there to be interpreted, and that's very important.
Well, Dr. Lafford, thank you very much. We'll take a break now, but stay with us and we'll be back with an expert in the science of... Today in the studio, we have Dr. Lafford from the Forensic Science Service, who is here to tell us a little more about forensic science.
Good morning.
Now, I think most people have a fairly good general picture of the kind of work you do. In many ways, it's a development of Sherlock Holmes and his magnifying glass, isn't it?
Yes, you could put it that way. Although we've come a long way since then, of course. But Holmes was very much a detective of the modern age. Of course, he was an intelligent man, and his medical knowledge often seemed better than that of his companion, Dr. Watson. And certainly his observations were always very detailed. But what sets him apart is that Holmes provides us with a good model, a very good model, in fact, of the kind of approach, psychological approach, that a forensic scientist should have. And that is that the forensic scientist is absolutely impartial.
So you're not, strictly speaking, part of the police force?
No, we are quite separate.
Could you tell us a little about your work and what it is you do?
Well, the basic principle behind forensic science is that every contact leaves a trace. Wherever we go, whatever we touch, material is transferred both ways. The shoe that leaves a mark on the ground also picks up traces of dirt. And the hand that makes a fingerprint also carries away particles from the object that was handled. And things like hair or carpet fibres are easily passed from one person to another.
I see. So it's not just that the suspect leaves clues at the scene of the crime. The scene of the crime leaves clues on the suspect.
Absolutely. And that is normally the most compelling evidence. Not just when you have a fingerprint, for example, but also where you found traces of, say, the carpet at the scene of a crime on the suspect's clothing. And that, of course, can be very hard to explain away.
Is your work fairly straightforward? A question of seeing whether various samples match up?
No, not at all. Forensic science is often a very painstaking task and very time-consuming. Much more so than previously, in fact, because the range of tests has mushroomed. For example, we might be given some pieces of a headlight swept up after a hit-and-run accident and asked to identify the car. So we would fit the thousands of pieces together like a vast jigsaw and might be able to identify the number embossed on the back of the glass. That would help us identify the model of the car, the make, the age, and so on, making it easier to search for the suspect. And then, once the car was located, we could tell whether the lights had been on at the time of the accident by examining the light bulb, because there would be minute pieces of molten glass on the metal filament in the bulb.
So you need some fairly sophisticated equipment, as well as patience.
Indeed. Now, the electron microscope is invaluable in our line of work, and it basically does two things. It gives us a fantastically detailed image. So, for example, you can tell whether a piece of hair has been broken or cut with a pair of scissors or a knife. And it can also give you the chemical composition of a sample, so that you can take, perhaps, a tiny flake of paint on a suspect's clothing and match it with paint at the scene of the crime.
Are you at the stage, then, where you could say that the evidence that you provide is foolproof?
No, not foolproof. There is always room for human error, and there's nothing that can be done about that. Forensics is not an absolute science. I mean, let me give you an example. Now, Sherlock Holmes might have found a strand of hair at the scene of a crime, perhaps black and 2 inches long, that would have helped him identify the murderer on the basis that the hair matched the murderer's. Now, we also examine hair. But in the example I gave you, perhaps one person in 20 has black hair 2 inches long. So we need to improve on this analysis to narrow down the number of suspects. So we would analyse the strand of hair using the electron microscope, as I was saying earlier, look at its chemical composition, whether it came from a man or a woman, see how it was cut, whether it showed any traces of particular chemicals and so on, And in that way, instead of saying that one person in 20 had hair like that, it might be one person in 500,000 or a million. That would be just about as far as we could go. Now, there's no such thing as certainty, just a balance of probability, even with the most advanced techniques of genetic fingerprinting. The evidence we provide is there to be interpreted, and that's very important.
Well, Dr. Lafford, thank you very much. We'll take a break now, but stay with us, and we'll be back with an expert in the science of...